Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Consequence Podcast Network. This is Indefensive Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Adam D., of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band, Link 80. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book Indefensive Ska, which is available currently in its expanded second edition.
Adam, what's your favorite band from Argentina?
I'm at a loss. I don't have a favorite band from Argentina.
I got one. I know mine. Unquestionably, it is Los Fabulosos Cadillacs.
Okay.
You've heard them before, right?
Sure, yeah.
They have a ska roots. They started as ska. They're ska all throughout their catalog, not exclusively ska. They're one of the most popular bands to ever play ska. However, they are one of the most popular bands of all of Latin America, regardless of genre.
Damn.
So we're talking about a huge band and a huge, how shall we say, important moment for ska is Los Fabulosos gaining popularity.
Yeah, definitely.
They have currently over 5 million monthly Spotify listeners.
That's insane.
Yeah. They've played all over the world. They've played Coachella, all kinds of stuff. And it's like, it's ska, rock and roll, various Latin rhythms. It's all amazing.
Yeah.
So let me break down a little bit of their history. They formed in Buenos Aires, Argentina in 1985. In those early days, they were strictly ska. There was a lot of political turmoil when they formed, and a little before they formed as well, when they were just young punks and mods. So this experience really informs their music and the message of their music. And so today we're going to talk to sax player Sergio Rotman, and we're going to get into those early years, them playing ska, and the politics and the influences of the band as well. Because they were a major influence on ska, like I've already said, but they were also a big influence on the rise of the global Spanish alt-rock scene, which really took shape in the 90s. And of course, they're also extremely important to the story of ska becoming popular in Latin America and Mexico, which I think is a thing that we've referenced many, many times. So that being a thing, I think Los Fabulosos' role in that cannot be understated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a loss. You know, there's no real way to put into words just how important Los Fabulosos are. But let's cut to Sergio and see if we can try.
First, I want to give people a sense of how big Los Fabulosos are. It was not last year, it was 2023. You broke a record with 3 million people came to see you in Mexico City and Zocalo. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. The thing is that it's the El Zocalo Square.
Yeah.
Which is a place where the Aztecs put the temples on top of the Mexicas, which actually put their temples on top of the previous civilization. So in that square, it's not only there were millions of people, but a millions of history of death and prayers and blood and wars for probably 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. So we are playing on top of that. Wow. And you can actually feel it. The thing is that 2 weeks before our show, there was an earthquake, as usual, in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And two pyramids came out of the floor that they had never been seen before. Whoa. Like magic coming out of the floor of the edge of the square. So there were these archaeological stuff, you know, happening all over. And there were every night the Aztecs do some kind of round. They dance around, and the energy is so volatile, so crazy. So we were playing in front of millions of people. They were expecting that. I think the record before, they were really mad because the band who broke the record from Paul McCartney was a typical banda band, you know, like cumbia banda from the north of Mexico. Yeah. And all the rockers were mad at it. Like, oh, how this dead band, which is this cheap music, beating our hero, Paul McCartney, we brought 185,000 people. So this band that came and brought like 250,000 people. Mm-hmm. So they were all ready to break the record, but not that much, you know. There were more rockers than we needed there, okay? So that was the whole ambience of the thing. There were people trying to prove that the popular music is rock music or ska or reggae or whatever, and not banda. You know, it was pretty impressive that we were actually making cultural decisions there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Putting Mexico, we are not a banda country, okay? We are rockers. So they all gathered there with a whole energy that's in the place. And it's going to be a video soon of that show. Mm-hmm. So probably by the end of this year or something like that. Because it was amazing.
What 3 does that million even people? Look like from the stage, Sergio?
Well, it's not new for us. We started as a ska band back in the 80s. Our first show was in March. Yeah, it's like 40 years, like now. And pretty soon, we have a couple of years in the underground movement, playing for 50 guys or 25 people. But very soon, we became a popular band in Argentina. Mm-hmm. So we have like two or three eras in the Cadillacs history. The first one was really ska, reggae, rocksteady oriented, maybe with some punk things, but mainly we looked like Rude Boys. We weren't Rude Boys, but we looked like Rude Boys. And we were the new thing in the 80s, mid 80s, 85 to 88, 89.
Yeah.
And we used to play for huge crowds. So our music is in a way perfect for big crowds, but I don't care. For me, the stage ends when ends the stage. I don't care if there are 2 million people, 3 million people, 3 people. I actually mean it. It's the same thing for me. Yesterday night I was doing a show in my bar. My club holds 100 people. It's a small club, and I'm definitely more nervous playing in that kind of small venues than playing with a Kaila for a million people. It's really natural for us. Our music is made to make 1-2 million people dancing. No problem with that. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about your early years, because you did start, you started as a ska band. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys discovered ska? Why you decided to start as a ska band?
Well, actually, I was the first mod in Argentina.
I'm kind of
proud.
Definitely.
Because the thing is that remember, this is in Argentina. We have the military. Mm-hmm. Well into the 80s, it was from the 70s, and so there was you can walk on the street at night in Buenos Aires, and you're going to be stopped by the police, you know? And so it was really dangerous to have a cool image or something like that in Argentina, because you attract the police attention, and they have the right to stop you and put you in jail for 48 hours just to check who you are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They can stop you in the street. Remember, there was internet or cell phones, nothing like that. So if the police thought that you were strange or kind of weird, they can stop you and get you in jail for 48 hours just to check who you are. They took 48 hours to check who you are. So you have to be really into the thing to walk around looking like a punk or looking like a mod in the early 80s in Argentina. So I started as a mod because they were showing Quadrophenia, the movie. Remember the movie? The movie. That was out in 79, and in Argentina came in 81. And I was getting into punk. Before that, I was more into classic rock or whatever. And I was getting into punk, and I went to see the movie. And it changed my life, definitely. They said, this is who am I. Mm-hmm. I'm a mod. Nothing farther than Buenos Aires from Camden, okay?
Yeah.
So I became a mod without knowing exactly what a mod is, because it's really a British thing, and it's a working class British thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I became a mod first, and then I discovered a band called The Gun Club with Jeffrey Pierce. Mm. So that was another change. So when I met the Cadillacs in 85, I was way out of the Rude Boys scene. I was looking at them like, oh, Rude Boys. That was like 2 years ago. You know what I mean? I'm into Gun Club now. Gun Club, Cramps, and that kind of Americana, gothic, dark movement. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of drugs. So for me, the Rude Boys, drinking alcohol was like, these kids are into what I was in like 2 years ago. The Special, what's that? But basically, I was drawback when I get into the Cadillacs to my original mod ska movement, which I really loved. So it was kind of weird for me. So I get into the Cadillacs, and the Cadillacs were into madness, heavily into madness.
I see.
So I brought them a lot of records because I was a record collector from an early age. So I was kind of the DJ of the Cadillacs. I thought, oh, hold on. There are more bands than Selector, Bad Manners, Madness, and The Specials. So I showed them the whole Jamaican thing, which I was brought back with when I was a mod, because I have all those 7 inches from, you know, Earl Dunkley or, Prince Jasbo, whatever. They were all crazy about that. So when we came to do the first album, my influence being a DJ was into the Cadillacs, and I was really into the Style Council. Remember the Style Council?
Sure,
Paul Weller's band.
Yeah, Paul Weller's band.
So the Style Council is playing kind of jazzy thing. So when you get to the album, to the first album, we already had another, you know, influence, which came from maybe a little bit of punk, a little bit of jazz, but we couldn't play that kind of style. We were learning our instruments. So when you're learning, it's very easy to play ska. You just do it. It's just 3 chords. But when we started messing with this kind of, you know, jazzy boleros thing that is mixed on the first Cadillac album, we actually couldn't play that. So we learned to play that as we were recording. So it was really fun. The beginning from the Cadillac wasn't just, you know, like ska influences. There was a lot of things going on.
How did you, as a DJ and as a fan, how did you come across these Jamaican records?
Well, I was really lucky to have a lot of interest, real interest for vinyl. I still have my record collection here with me. Mm-hmm. Although I sold a lot of albums when the CD came along, until I realized that CD sounded like shit. It was like 2 or 3 years,
yeah.
You know? But I kept my record collection. I kept most of my record collection, and I was collecting stuff as we were traveling, more in the 90s, but in the beginning, if you have a record in Buenos Aires, you share it. Because remember, this is the 80s, there was no info, there was a military junta working, you know, fixing things in our country. So any information you had, you share it with people like you. So that was the first thing that I did with the guy. Come on, check my record collection. They were like, wow. He had the whole jam collection. They were like really crazy about that. So that was the kind of thing. I was a DJ from the very beginning. Before working and doing DJ sets, I was actually the guy who was showing the new bands to the to my bandmates.
Mm-hmm. In the early mid-80s of Argentina, there's quite a few bands that are mixing ska and reggae, like Soda Stereo, Sumo, Los Fabulosos, Auténticos Decadentes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that? Was that, did it become popular for a while in Argentina to mix ska and reggae in your music?
Well, yes. The thing is that you have to remember the ska movement actually was really a movement in USA or Europe, but here in Latin America came as a mix of what we call new wave. Mm-hmm. So a lot of bands doing one ska song, one reggae track, but they weren't, you know, like rude boy bands or nothing like that. So Soda Stereo particularly was a really pretty famous band, and they mixed pop with other styles, you know, a little bit of reggae, a little of ska, but you couldn't say that it were ska properly. Sumo was a different thing. Sumo has a guy called Luca Prodam who used to live in Manchester, and he was really part of that scene, of the Joy Division New Order scene. He was actually one of the guys who was working there, really important guy. So he came along to Argentina because he was trying to leave his heroin addiction, you know, and he made a big mistake coming to Argentina because he changed the heroin addiction to alcohol. You know how that happened. So he died in 87, but he was a very important figure. And he, yes, he Sumo used to play really good reggae and really good ska. But actually, there were, you know, like in the Cadillacs, there were, wasn't just Jamaican influences. They have post-punk influences, but they were really, really good. So the Stereo, there was a good band, but it was more like a pop band. You know what I mean? So Sumo was a different thing. Was profound, was deep, was really intense. And the other band that you mentioned, Los Auténticos Decadentes, I can figure it out maybe 5 years later. We were talking about probably 82, 83, 84, 85, 86 was the first Cadillacs album. And the Los Decadentes album is 89. And the whole thing changed because we had a democratic government. It was much easier to play shows and feel safe doing that.
The bands like Soda Stereo and Sumo, I mean, they took a lot of influence from British music, right? So obviously they were into post-punk, but they were into like Madness and The Police and these other bands. Is that why there was a little bit of ska and reggae in a lot of these bands? Was it because of the influence from the British bands?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. But it was really popular in those days in the early 80s and the late 70s. Have a ska song on your list, you know? You can check that on The Pretender, Joe Jackson, The Police. All those bands weren't ska bands, but they have a ska song. Yeah. Just to make the party going on, you know? They have the slow one and the rock one and the ska song where everybody was partying. But none of those bands were ska bands or two-tone bands or whatever, or rude boys or whatever. But it was really popular to do that. So it was the same thing in Argentina.
So with the original version of Los Fabulosos, did you guys intend to be more like, we're going to be a ska band? We're not going to just do one or two songs. We're going to be...
We were rude boys.
Yeah.
Forget it. We were rude boys. I cut my hair to look like more like the Cadillacs. Because I was coming from my post-punk look, wearing all black and makeup and stuff like that. So, okay, let's cut my hair to look more like these guys. But I was actually looking at them like, oh, yeah, I used to do this like 2 years ago. I can do it again. I can take the dust out of my suits, you know, keep my leather jacket on, you know, for a while and put my suit back. But, yeah, Cadillac definitely was trying in the first 2 years, 85, 86. We looked like rude boys. We posed like rude boys. We acted like rude boys. We were really fighters on the night, and we were drunk all the time.
You know, you talked about what was happening politically in the early 80s, but there's also a thing, I believe in like 82, where there's a conflict with the UK, and then music with English lyrics gets banned from the radio. So then it's only bands with Spanish songs that are going on the radio.
And exactly.
And this kind of impacts like these bands like Sumo and Soda Stereo and other local bands becoming mm-hmm. popular, right?
Yep. Yeah, actually what happened was exactly as you said. Remember that there was before that it was 75% of the music that sounded in Buenos Aires was in English, as different to the rest of Latin America, which they have, you know, like Caribbean influences here. No, it was just the Rolling Stones sounding on the radio all the time. So when that was stopped by the by what you already said about the conflict, the Malvinas conflict, they couldn't, the radio operators were trying to, well, we can't play the 75% kind of music that we're playing. It was probably some kind of disco, much more what I call AOR, like mm-hmm. adult oriented rock.
Yeah.
You know, like Fleetwood Mac or whatever. That was what was sounding on the radio. And then suddenly they have to put something on. And 75% of the kind of music that they were putting, they couldn't play it. So they went to rock music, Argentinian rock music. And well, a lot of bands came on that, but it mostly hippie bands. They didn't add, you know, like rock, heavy rock, Argentinian bands. What they made place for like pop and, you know, acoustic kind of thing, you know, was, remember, we're in a war. You don't want heavy metal sounding when you're in war. You rather have, you know, James Taylor kind of version of, you know. So it was really weird because suddenly during probably 1 year, there was just Spanish music sounding on the radio. But it didn't change really much. It was kind of a funny thing. It wasn't like, oh, suddenly, well, there were a lot of bands playing in Buenos Aires. No. The night was still terrible, dangerous, and confusing.
So when the Cadillacs are forming, you guys are clearly, you know, opposed to what's happening in the government. So where do you guys stand in terms of like writing lyrics and what you guys are about? Did you take a stand against these things in the government, or were you kind of scared to?
Well, Cadillacs, as most of those bands, come from the punk scene. Mm-hmm. The punk rock scene in Buenos Aires was really, really good. Really good in the 80s. Really, really good. It became popular later and it wasn't so interesting. But in the very beginning, the punk scene was really, really good. The bands like Casos Muertos, Los Violadores, Los Laxantes, Los Baraja, all those bands were really good. That was really dangerous. Mm-hmm. We used to say to our, because I didn't have a phone in my house, I used to tell my dad, okay, I'm going to that neighbor. So if I'm not back at home at 9 a.m., go to the local police department in that neighbor and look for me. I'm going to be there. And that happened every night. We used to have shows, and the police came along with this big bosses, and they filled with the people with that, coming straight from the show. They put the bus in the entrance of the show. They open, so you get out of the bar and go straight to the bus, and they take you to the police station. You know, that was pretty regular. So, but doing nothing, you know, you weren't broken bottles, you know, on people's head, nothing like that. We're just playing punk rock music. And that was that. Maybe a little bit of pogo or slam dancing, but that was all. Anyway, you end up in jail.
It didn't stop you. You didn't care?
Yeah. You know what boring life is? Mm-hmm. If you have a boring life, that you'd rather go in jail instead of having, you know, stay in your house when there wasn't cable. You know, this is the 80s in Argentina, no cable. The TV finished at 1 a.m. and there was the priest giving you the blessings, and the television goes, nothing to do. So you'd rather go be in jail. No problem with that. Boring was... we call the Pale City. The Pale City. It was a perfect way to describe how Buenos Aires was in the 70s. Pale. Boring. And yes, we have a lot of political stances, but when the Cadillacs started in 85, we have clearly the side we are on. We were against the government and against the police. Mm-hmm. But we started doing lyrics that were more lighter because we needed to dance. Buenos Aires needed to dance. We already had a protest song. We have the punk rock movement. That was time to, yes, please. I want to dance and see girls. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we already fought that fight, you know, against the police. So now we need some entertainment. We need to dance. We need to drink. We need to go, you know, have fun. That was very important. So yeah. We have a band like Virus, mm-hmm. which I recommend. We were pretty popular. And so you go to see Virus and just to dance, you know, not thinking, I don't care about the police. I just want to dance and feel happy yeah. after so much grayness, if this word exists.
I mean, when you're living in an oppressive, when you're living with an oppressive regime, the act of just having fun and dancing in public is a form of protest.
Absolutely. And we learned that because, you know, the protest songs came strictly from guys like Bob Dylan. They were doing the protest songs. In Buenos Aires, there were a lot of Bob Dylans. So you don't need anymore. What you need is a 9-piece band playing proper ska live in, you know?
Yeah.
For the people dancing. That's what we needed. And the Cadillacs were perfect for that. If you didn't have a clearly political message, and you have probably a kind of a humorous lyrics, that was more political than having, you know, like another Bob Dylan, you know?
Yeah, and I think like, and the oppressive regime, I mean, what they want is people to be scared and to stay home and to not get together. So people getting together and dancing is kind of saying to the regime, we're not afraid of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they couldn't understand. One thing that was fun, that the police and the government couldn't figure it out what we exactly were. Because we were wearing suits.
Yeah.
But they obviously they didn't know what the word rude boy means. You know? So what is these people? They're wearing suits. They're playing dance or music, but they look weird. So they couldn't figure out what to do with us. So we managed to get into, you know, the popular thing doing that. We are really crazy kids, but we were dressed good. So it was really fun. And it was a really rebellious way to present yourself. Mm-hmm. Because you were clearly not supporting any kind of government or nothing like that. But you weren't playing an acoustic guitar. And you weren't a hippie. So they took like 2 or 3 years to understand what we were.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Do you remember the first show you played?
Yep, definitely. I get into the Cadillacs played 2 shows without me. They didn't have a brass section or nothing like that. And then I got the gig to the 3rd show. That was March 1985 in a small club called Blues. Mm-hmm. And we did like 2 or 3 shows. And actually, we were called the Cadillacs 57 or Cadillacs 57. Mm-hmm. So the guy from the Blues bar saw us. They loved the man. And in the next week, they hired us for the next week's show. And they put in on the newspaper, Los Fabulosos Cadillacs 57. Oh. So that the change of the name came from this guy who don't remember who he was. He decided to put the adjective Los Fabulosos before Cadillacs 57. So we drew up the 57. I left Los Fabulosos Cadillacs.
Just because you guys were fabulous.
I wasn't fabulous. We were drunk, actually. We were fabulous, so we drunk.
Was there a moment where you started to feel like you were really developing an audience and you guys were getting big? Did it happen before the first record or after the first record?
In the second album.
So by the second
album? The second album, we started touring the Argentina. So we stopped playing Buenos Aires, the small club, like we did in the first 2 years, 85, 87, 85, 86, and mid 87. And we were starting getting shows at the discos in the interior of Argentina. Remember, Argentina is big. It's like the States. Mm-hmm. So yeah. What happened is that we stopped playing in Buenos Aires and we hired the bus and we started playing on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, probably at 300, 400 kilometers from our house. So we played discos in the small cities of Argentina. That was the thing. And we played really late. At the first, they have, it wasn't cumbia, it wasn't like that. It was like probably some kind of disco music. And then they have a show. And we were what kind of band? We were music to people's dance to. So they started hire us, and we're doing these small tours every week. So we left the house on Thursday night, and we came back on Monday morning. So that was a real change for us. Although we weren't that big in playing shows, us alone, we were having a lot of gigs at discotheques around Argentina. So by 1988, we did our first proper stadium, Obras Stadium, and we did three shows. Before that, we did a couple of theaters in Buenos Aires, sold out, but probably 500 people, something like that. But Obras, which is a huge stadium, it was like 5,000. So at the first attempt to do an Obras Stadium, we did three. We sold out like three shows. That was a big jump. And it was fun because the publicity for that was Flavio's, the bass player face, with a Cadillac wrote in his forehead. And the advertising didn't say the Cadillac. It was just his face. And he says, "Do you know what your kids are going to be doing next week?" And that was all over Buenos Aires. And it didn't just say Fabuloso Cadillacs, not Obras Stadium, nothing. It was just Flavio's face. And "Do you know what your kids are going to be doing next week?" I was incredible. It was the first time someone did something like that in Argentina. And it was amazing. What a really good shows. But now we are in 1988 and we are in the third album. The second album has our first ska big hit, which is called Mi Novia Se Cayó en un Pozo Ciego. Which is a weird song, which the translation should be "My girlfriend fall in a shithole" or something like that. "My girlfriend falls in a shithole," like that. That's the translation. Go check yourself that song.
Yeah, what's the song about?
Well, it was exactly that. the singer is saying, "I can't find my girlfriend. She falls in a shithole." you know,
was it based on an actual experience?
No. It was actual the actual drunkenness that we had. It was, you know, we're all drunk discussing what happened with your girlfriend. "Oh, she fell in a shithole." "And what is going on?" "I don't know. I can't hear her." Maybe. Just go and check your songs. You have Google Translation. It is going to be much better than mine.
So in 88, you do the Revolution Rock. Is that when you guys do Vasos Vacios with Celia Cruz?
Yep. That's our third album. By the third album, we were really popular. We had a massive hit single in Buenos Aires, or maybe two or three massive hit singles. My life changed. I left my parents' house and I started a really, really crazy era. We were really young. Remember, if you're talking about a guy who was 25 in 88, he was like a guy 15 now. You know, we were really innocent. And we were on tour all the time. So you don't sleep and you don't eat for like 4 days in a row, something like that. So we were really crazy, but but we were really good. Like, it doesn't mess with my lifetime. Doesn't mess with the music, the live music. We're really good as a live band.
What was the song that blew up? What was the big song?
Okay, I think the first one was Mi Novia Se Llora Un Pozo Ciego. Yeah. The second one was Yo No Me Sentaría En Tu Mesa. And the third one was El Genio del Dove.
Porque nada de eso te puede elevar. Porque nada de eso te puede elevar. Porque nada de eso te puede elevar.
That was the three singles from Yo Te Avisé album from the second album of Cadillacs.
Yeah.
On the first album, the single was Silencio Hospital, which is proper ska madness kind of thing.
Yeah.
Really ska, really two-tone, really fast. And by the third album, we put a really strange single, because if you see the cover of the third album, there was a lot of Beastie Boys influence on the Fabuloso Skylark. So we have a guy who used to play percussion and started rapping. So there was really weird. Remember, this is 1988. License to Ill, the first Beastie Boys album, is from 1986 or 87. So we were probably right on time, you know, like starting white people rapping and mixing music with rap. So but the single was Revolution Rock.
Yeah. That one
from the third album.
That was really
because big. When Celia came to record with us, no one knows in Argentina who Celia Cruz was.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they offer her to a lot of classical rock musicians like Charlie Garcia. And she said, I don't know that lady. I don't care. And they offer to Soda Stereo and they said, no, we don't know her. And we say, hey, we know her. Bring her on. And so it was fun because at that time, Vaso Vacío was already recorded. So we didn't know that it's going to be on Celia Cruz, you know, vocal chart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. It was an unforgettable night. That was top three of my musical experiences, recording with that lady.
Yeah, for people that don't know, she is an absolute legend, a salsa.
That's the queen of salsa.
Yeah. She was like a delight to work with.
She was out of this world.
Yeah.
She was incredible. You know, I'm talking about first class artist. This is not your regular singer or your regular, you know, musician. This is top of the league. And we were really young. There's a couple of pictures right there that you can see us recording with her. And remember, we had a song. We already had a song. We didn't write the song for her. She came along to the recording session. I said, well, what shall we do? And Vicentico said, do you want to try my song? This is so slow reggae kind of root rocksteady ska. It's really weird, Vaso Vacío. It's not fast enough and it's not slow enough. It's right in the middle. But it grooves. So she said, oh, this is beautiful. I'm going to sing with you. So Vicentico wasn't a professional singer that is now. So from the bar, straight to the recording studio, face to face with Celia Cruz with one microphone. So for him, it was incredible.
Yeah.
He did a great job. And she was amazing. It was so good. And she finished that obviously in the first take. And she said, oh, let's do another one. And there's another song called Más Solo Que La Noche Anterior in that album, which is doing inspiration. You know what inspiration in a salsa is? It's when they go to the Montuno and the salsa start improvising.
Mm-hmm.
So the salsa singer, you know, start improvising about something, which is really common in salsa. You do the first verse, the chorus, the second verse, the chorus, and then the montuno. And on top of the montuno, the singer start improvising, which is basically what salsa is. So she did that in a very reggae kind of UB40 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was really a cross of cultures, because you know how the Caribbean is. It's very different. Jamaica is one thing. Cuba is a different thing. Puerto Rico is a different thing. República Dominicana is different. So it was really good. It was an amazing night. It was like probably 4 or 5 hours with her. And we couldn't believe it. It was, there's no words to express what we felt.
Yeah. I mean, it's and the stuff you did with her is amazing. So I'm curious, you were saying that by the second album, you were growing popular in the whole state or the whole country of Argentina. When did you start to play other countries in Latin America?
No, that was much later.
Yeah,
so that was in the 90s. Because what happened with the Cadillacs is by 1989, when we have our fourth album, the economical thing in Argentina crashed. The economics crashed violently. We have inflation, like 100 inflation per month. So you were buying a beer and you paid $10 in the morning and 15 in the night at the same place. Wow. So it was crazy. So that's when you have an economical thing that we have in our country, really fragile and obviously directed by higher powers. So we are poor, we are supposed to be poor. And if you're not poor, they pour hyperinflation to make you poor. You know what I mean? That was very easy when you have a fragile economical like us, you know? So suddenly we used to do like 200 shows a year in 1988 to 15 or 1989. So I have to go back living with our parents. And we have to stop the band because we have no shows. We had like probably 20 shows in 1989 and 15 in 1990.
Wow.
So that was a really stressful situation for us. And we lost in that period two main characters in the band. The percussion player, Luciano, and the saxophone player. I played alto and he played tenor. So I had to figure out the band completely from scratch. So by 1992, the whole economical thing started going okay. The IMF started messing with Argentina. They gave us some money. They put a really strange situation when 1 peso is $1. Can imagine 1 peso, $1. Okay. And we starting to create a new band. Because by 1992, we have two new members. And one of the members was Toto, was a percussion player. And he could play salsa. So we started, changing and leaving the two-tone thing for more of a Latin group. We kept playing ska. But Morris was like scandalized oriented, more jazzy, not much of the ska, rude boy, like two tones and kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we actually can play by then. We were playing for like 7 years together and we started sounding really, really good. And with these new members, Fernando on trombone and Toto on percussion, we can figure it out how to groove in a salsa rhythm. That is really hard, really difficult. It takes you a lot of time, a lot of practice, and you need the right instrumentals for that and the right members in the band. So by 1992, we started recording El León, and that was the album that actually made us play Latin America. Actually, next year, 1992, with Batador, and we were talking about incredible kind of things. We were reborn and we have a success again. So I don't know how many bands happened that, you know, like being on top, then straight down, living with your parents again, have no money at all, and then go up again with a different kind of music and a different kind of look. We were much into what we call rock alter latino with Mano Negra, Todos Tus Muertos, Negu Gorriak, Fabulosos Cadillacs, Maldita Vecindad, Café Tacuba. All those bands was before, between 1990, 1991, 1992, 83. And it was huge movement, and it was very good. I love that era. I really think that we are in our prime in the era.
Now, and that, and because of El Matador and the video, I believe that that got really big in the U.S. as well, right?
It was, MTV had a lot of to do with that. There was MTV Latin.
Yeah.
So suddenly we were in every people's house, from Nicaragua to Canada to Madrid to Buenos Aires. And yeah, that was sounding all the time, and everybody wants the Cadillacs on playing live. We were a great live band. We are actually a great live band. But in those days, we were really young and having success and knowing that that success came from failure. You know what I mean? When you have your second time, when you're successful, you really appreciate it because you're already on top, then down, then on top, and you want to be on top. You don't want to go down again, okay? You don't want to be poor again. You don't want to go living with your parents again. You were probably 31, 30, and, you know, so we have to be really good. So, yes, Matador was an open door for us. And from that, the sky was the limit, and we were really good. In the 90s, there's no band that can match our live show. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be in a festival and playing after the Kaila. You don't want to do that now. It's a fucking nightmare. Oh, yeah. Who's going to close the show? That band? No, put the Cadillacs on top on the end of the show, on the end of the festival. No. But it's going to be too early. No importa. Pon a los Cadillacs al final. Because you don't want to be after the Cadillacs, really.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying Ska now more than ever. Well, how was that for you, listener? Did you get what you came for? Or are you thirsty for more? Check it out. We have a Patreon. And over on the Patreon is an extended version of this episode. And most episodes, if I'm completely honest. So, Aaron?
Yeah, and this is a special Patreon episode because we stopped recording at the end of the regular episode. We had some technical issues, but we recovered it. So then we scheduled an entire separate day just to do the Patreon portion.
Yeah.
So you know that's special.
Yes.
Yeah, I want you to listen to it. I really, like, it means a lot to me if you listen to it.
Join the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Support the cause.
Yes.
Rock out in style.
Rock out in style.
Do it for the children.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll see you behind the curtain over at the Patreon. Bye-bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.